7 weblink document URL, https://clairemontrevieweofbooks.com/outhor/angelo-m-codavilla/author-angelo-m-codavilla-angelo-m-codavilla-1943-2021 was a senior fellow of the Claremont Institute and professor emeritus of international relations at Boston University. He received his B.A. Bachelor of Arts degree from Rutgers University and M.A. Master's of Arts degree from Notre Dame University and his Ph.D. in Security Studies, U.S. Foreign Policy and Political Theory from the Claremont Graduate School. At Boston University from 1995, Professor Codavilla was a U.S. Naval officer, an assistant professor at the Grove City College and North Dakota State College, a U.S. Foreign Service officer, and a member of President-elect Reagan's transition teams within the U.S. Department of State. He dealt with Western Europe and with matters affecting the U.S. intelligence community. He served as a U.S. Senate staff member dealing with oversight of the intelligence services, a professorial lecturer at Georgetown University, and a senior research fellow for the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. On Amazon.com, The Character of Nations, How Politics Makes and Breaks Prosperity, Family, and Civility, by Angelo Codavilla, 2000. Between the Alps and a Hard Place, by Angelo Codavilla, 2000. The Prince, by Niccolo Machiavelli, translated by Angelo Codavilla, 1995. Informing Statecraft, Intelligence for a New Century, by Angelo Codavilla, 1992. Arms Control Delusion, by Malcolm Wallop and Angelo Codavilla, 1987. While Others Build, The Common Sense Approach to the Strategic Defense Initiative, by Angelo Codavilla, 1988. War, Ends and Means, by Paul Seabury and Angelo Codavilla, 1988. Modern France, by Angelo Codavilla, 1974. Articles by Angelo M. Codavilla. The Election to End All Elections. The Election to End All Elections. Trump, imperfect as he is like a finger in a dike that, if removed, would loose a deluge. The Election to End All Elections. The Election to End All Elections. Millenarian Mobs. Millenarian Mobs. An Old and Dangerous Story. The Original Fascist. The Original Fascist. From Movement to Epithet. What's Russia to us? What's Russia to us? Up from Russophobia. Defending the Nation. Defending the Nation. Why We Need Nationalism, Now More Than Ever.
Winter 2019 Book Reviews. Defending the Nation. Why We Need Nationalism, Now More Than Ever. By Angelo M. Codavilla. Books reviewed for Yoram Hazony. Governments are either nations or empires. This is a more superficial distinction than Aristotle's, for whom a regime's purpose is paramount, whether ruled by one, few, or many. Despite its limitations, however, Hazony's new book, The Virtue of Nationalism, is worth reading because it focuses so succinctly on what nations are, why they are good, what distinguishes nations from empires, and why Western elites attempt to drown nations in liberal super-nationalist institutions is bad. The book presents an anti-imperialist theory that seeks to establish a world of free and independent nations, un monde de patries, as Charles de Gaulle would have said. The president of the Herzl Institute in Jerusalem, and himself an Israeli, Hazony is a proud part of the prototypical nation, a people forever defined by the covenant they made with the Lord God. In quasi-Platonic terms, Israel is thus the idea of the nation. Others are nations insofar as they approach that idea. The Israelites defined themselves by their adherence to God, who shaped his people morally by giving them the Ten Commandments to instruct them in basic personal behavior. Hazony calls these the moral minimum. God once endowed and limited his nation by giving them a land to be their own, while warning them, as he does in Deuteronomy 2:4-19, to meddle not with other peoples, whom he had also endowed with lands to be their own. Ye are to pass through the coast of your brethren the children of Esau, which dwell in Seir. Meddle not with them. For I will not give you of their land, no, not so much as a foot breadth. Because I have given Mount Seir unto Esau for a possession. Distress not the Moabites, neither contend with them in battle, for I will not give thee of their land for a possession. Because I have given Arkansas unto the children of Lot for a possession. And when thou comest nigh over against the children of Ammon, distress them not, nor meddle with them, for I will not give thee of the land of the children of Ammon any possession. Because I have given it unto the children of Lot for a possession. From the beginning, then, Hazony shows that the prototypical nation was living within limited borders alongside other independent nations. And uninterested in bringing its neighbors under its rule. It welcomed strangers who said, as Ruth did, "Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God." God willed that Israel rule itself, as the prophet Jeremiah declared, "And their nobles shall be of themselves, and their governors shall proceed from the midst of them." Its rulers would serve the people, because only God himself is master of all. Having freed Israel from the Egyptian Empire, the Lord settled his people in the midst of the Assyrian, Babylonian, and other Near Eastern empires, whose masters intended to deprive of self-rule as many peoples, nations, as they could conquer. *** Hazzoni rightly reminds us that all states are perpetually on the verge of losing their cohesion and independence. The Hebrew Bible first taught the fragility of political order, at every moment either rising or falling, moving toward either consolidation or dissolution, depending on whether human freedom is aided or hindered by the state, and whether the extension of the imperial state leads or not to mankind's enslavement. Peoples who are free to rule themselves are perpetually at risk of giving up the conditions of nationhood, the moral minimum and independence, and hence of being absorbed into empires, as the Israelites eventually became the successive vassals of the Babylonians, Persians, Greeks, and Romans. Empire also results from the mistaken faith that only an authority superior to discrete peoples can prevent their pursuit of disparate purposes from ruining peace and prosperity. Hazzoni may be excused for attributing the Western world's taste for empire to Catholic Christianity. But regarding the Holy Roman Empire as a continuation of Roman imperialism, as he does, misconstrues Christian political thought. In fact, Pope Gelasius's doctrine of the two swords, secular and spiritual, restating as it does Augustine's City of God, simply reiterates Christ's distinction between duties to Caesar and duties to God. Hazzoni himself notes the same distinction and tension between the demands of what he calls the right of national self-determination, secular power, and those of the moral minimum. What's more, the medieval political order was anything but imperial. Countless jurisdictions flexed manifold autonomies. The emperor was one German potentate among many. Hazzoni credits the Protestant Reformation for having introduced diversity in Christendom. But in fact, for good and ill, it only confirmed its constituent parts' growing independence. Hazzoni cites Sir John Fortescue's De Laudibus Legum Anglia in praise of the laws of England, circa 1470, as an example of the new diversity. But Fortescue was describing laws and customs elaborated during the Middle Ages, while kingdoms in Spain and Christian republics in Italy were doing the same. Throughout Europe, post-Reformation politics became much harsher as rulers, Protestant as well as Catholic, arrogated to themselves spiritual as well as temporal powers, for which they were roundly criticized by both Catholic Cardinal Roberto Bellarmino and Protestant divine Richard Hooker. America's founding generation was both steeped in the Bible and confirmed by circumstance and habit to decide things for themselves. They rebelled in the name of a politics such as Fortescue had described, arising from a version of Christian politics that, by then, was a distant memory. Having come a long way to get clear from the rest of the world, the colonists were keen to keep clear, and assumed that they could stay clear because the world is rightly made up of independent nations. Conscious as they were that their county's future greatness would tempt their progeny to follow Rome's path, they eschewed the Pax Romana explicitly. Nevertheless, any number of Americans today, including conservatives, yearn to administer a Pax Americana. But in America, where imperialism is a curse word, advocacy of such things as the European Union, Hazzoni points out, is conducted in a murky newspeak riddled with euphemisms such as "New World Order," "Ever-Closer Union," "Openness," "Globalization," "Global Governance," "Pooled Sovereignty," "Rules-Based Order," "Universal Jurisdiction," "International Community," "Liberal Internationalism," "Transnationalism," "American Leadership," and so on. Any people that lacks adherence to laws natural and divine, reverence for their ancestral institutions, habits of frugality and industry, general sentiments of social equality, pure and virtuous morals, and a willingness to endure personal suffering for common causes, in short, who lack bonds of mutual loyalty, is a collection of individuals whose consent is always up for grabs. Such people cannot become, nor long endure as, a nation. Nor can such people hope to find peace and justice under any super-national arrangement. That is because the question, who rules, hovers over all politics. The answer, which Plato and Aristotle never forgot and which Hazzoni reminds his readers, is, more often than not, rulers rule on their own behalf. Even imperial imposition of impartial norms is an illusion because, invariably, empires reflect the emperor's character. As Hazzoni explains, the empire necessarily concerns itself with abstract categories that are, in its eyes, universal. But these categories are always detached from the circumstances and interests, traditions and aspirations of the particular clan or tribe to which they are now to be applied. This means that from the perspective of the particular clan or tribe, imperial law will often appear to be ill-conceived, unjust, and perverse. Yet, the unique clan or tribe with no standing to protest must inevitably strike the imperial order as narrow-minded. More importantly, the imperial state has to be built on some bond of mutual loyalty, or its soldiers will not be willing to fight and die for it. This means that every empire depends on a ruling nation, its language and customs, and its unique way of understanding the world. Angelo M. Codavilla, 1943-2021, was a senior fellow of the Claremont Institute and professor emeritus of international relations at Boston University. He received his B.A. Bachelor of Arts degree from Rutgers University. Ye Shall Be As Gods, Ye Shall Be As Gods by James V. Shaw. Modern Christianity has failed to distinguish itself fully from humanism. Making the Presidency Great Again. Making the Presidency Great Again by Mark Halperin. It takes more than an election to make a president. Best of Enemies. Best of Enemies by Richard Samuelson. Gordon Wood's method presumes that there is not a robust or trunch historical human nature. View this issue at publication of the Claremont Institute. A Certain Idea of France. A Certain Idea of France. The Life and Times of Charles de Gaulle. On the Natural Law of War and Peace. On the Natural Law of War and Peace. A Guide for Statesmen and Warriors. War Without End. War Without End. Does the U.S. need a grand strategy? The Cold Civil War. The Cold Civil War. Statecraft in a divided country. The Tipping Point. The Tipping Point. Douglas MacArthur versus the ruling class. The Rise of Political Correctness. The Rise of Political Correctness. From Marx to Gramsci to Trump. The Ever Shallower Atlantic. The Ever Shallower Atlantic. Partisan Superficiality at the Atlantic. Make America Victorious Again. Make America Victorious Again. Trump's virtue in foreign policy lies in having voiced this simple, vital thought. U.S. foreign policy must put America first. After the Republic. After the Republic. Regardless of the election's outcome, the Republic established by the founders is gone. Respecting the Respectable. Respecting the Respectable. Angelo Codavilla looks at a new biography of John Quincy Adams. The Courage of His Contradictions. The Courage of His Contradictions. Kissinger's 17th book does, in fact, make plain the views on war, peace, and America's global role. While the storm clouds gather asterisk. While the storm clouds gather asterisk. Spies like us. A Review of Secrecy and Democracy, The CIA in Transition, by Stansfield Turner. Courtiers. A Review of Barack Obama's Post-American Foreign Policy, The Limits of Engagement, by Robert Singh. Confront and Conceal, Obama's Secret Wars and Surprising Use of American Power, David E. Sanger. Bending History, Barack Obama's Foreign Policy, by Martin S. Indyk, Kenneth G. Lieberthal, and Michael E. O'Hanlon. And the Obamians, The Struggle Inside the White House to Redefine American Power, by James Mann. The Sources of American Conduct. The Sources of American Conduct. A Review of George F. Kennan, and American Life, by John Lewis Gaddis. The Lost Decade. The Lost Decade. 16 years after 9/11, America has neither peace nor victory. Victory Watch I, are we winning yet? Victory Watch I, are we winning yet? No, not even close, reports Angelo Codavilla in this ongoing assessment of the war on terrorism. The chosen one. The rise of Barack Obama. Our borders, ourselves. American Euro trademark. Appetite for cheap labor and cheap drugs endangers Mexico. Why we don't win. Nearly a decade after 9/11, the U.S. government hasn't managed to ensure our peace, safety, and freedom. Transcendental Hustlers. A Review of Freedom Just Around the Corner, A New American History, 1585-1828. In Throes of Democracy, The American Civil War Era, 1829-1877, by Walter McDougall. Making War. A Discussion Between Bret Stephens and Angelo Codavilla. Inside the Box. A Review of Terror and Consent, The Wars for the 21st Century, by Philip Bobbitt. American Statecraft and the Iraq War. Learning from Our Mistakes. Intelligence Failures. The CIA serves not the United States but its own corporate interests and its partisan vision. Ends, enemies, and friends. Victory comes when enemies are identified correctly, then killed or cowed. Strategically challenged. Insight into the devolution of America's foreign policy establishment. The logic of the peace process. We keep hoping they'll come up with a Jerry Adams. Some call it empire. Imperial delusions are no substitute for defeating our enemies. Get serious. Schlesinger's book is a sad testament to the state of the modern academy. Doing it the hard way. Shut down Al-Jazeera, control the oil fields, kill terrorist regimes. No victory, no peace. What Rumsfeld's memo reveals and conceals. When the cheering stops, the battle of Iraq is one victory in a war on terror that began on September 11. The war on terror is not over. Yet it is not endless. Confusion and power. The worst policy for the United States is to combine the unbridled tongue with the unready hand. Soldiers, statesmen, and victory. America's political-military elite consistently get the big ones wrong. War at last. President Bush must commit to war and kill the causes of terrorism. The path to victory. American people do not live surrounded by a moat, which means that there are 10,000 concentrations of people every day. Angelo M. Codavilla responds. A rejoinder to Buckley, Gaffney, Owens, Potteretz, and Tucker. What war? What war? The Bush team's conduct of the war made the Arab world less afraid of America. Victory, what it will take to win victory, what it will take to win. Angelo M. Codavilla explains how to win dash and how not to win dash America's war on terrorism. Ariel Sharon's dilemma. Ariel Sharon's dilemma. Israel has never lost a battle, nor has it ever won a war. Wake dash up call. Wake dash up call. Kagan's explanations of and remedies for military unseriousness are not what one would expect from a great student of Thucydides. A publication of the Claremont Institute.